Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined by Ronnie Martin and Barnabas Piper, who's just returned from just the glitz and the glamour of the Southern Baptist Convention. Pipe, can you tell us anything about that?
By glitz and glamour, did you mean like pot bellies and stretchy chinos?
That's exactly what I meant.
Because
you're reading my mind. We've been hosting together too long.
And yeah. there's nothing like pot bellies and stretchy chinos in St. Louis in June when it is around 274 degrees.
Plus St. Louis in June, the city of dreams.
Oh, it's amazing. They have a big bent metal thing that's the feature of their city.
Yeah, it's nice.
I knew I picked the wrong denomination.
It just radiates the heat, you know, but at least you get that nice breeze off the river.
Yeah, it smells like industrial waste. It's awesome.
It smells like industrial waste, and then you add to that the glamour of just various pastors from the South.
Who may also smell like industrial waste.
who may or may not. You know, we're not saying one way or the other. So I know this is let's call it precarious topic, just given your employment status with the Southern Baptist organization. But can you share like one funny story from your time?
Yeah, I feel like you are. I feel like you're asking me to like hopscotch through a minefield here. I got to be careful.
I am.
Funny story. Let's see. Well, okay. So this is sort of a quintessential Southern Baptist moment, and it fits the podcast well. So I was witness to this. It did not happen to me. So as our team with Lifeway leadership, we had a booth set up. So we're talking about a conference we have coming up, and we're talking about some different resources we have, just different pastors who are coming through, a typical convention center floor setup. Yeah. And I'm coming back from, I don't know, getting a drink of water or grabbing lunch or something, and I see this very, very enthusiastic, eager guy. He's probably mid-20s, like right up in my boss's face. And my boss is he's not a confrontational person. He's pretty laid back, and he just isn't – and he just kind of is looking at this guy like, if you don't move away shortly, I may elbow you in the teeth.
I'm going to drop you. I'm going to drop you like a bad habit.
So I walk up right as this guy walks away, and my boss turns around and hands me a card, and the card that this guy gave him, and he said, "Here, this is for you." And turns out this guy had charged up, and the first words out of his mouth are you Calvinist?
Oh, wow.
And just went on like a full-on screed about how Calvinists, like his words were, Calvinists don't worship the same God we do.
Wow.
Now, I do not say this to paint all Southern Baptists in that light. That is a particularly contentious issue amongst Southern Baptists. Some are quite reformed. Some are quite anti-reformed, as you just heard. But that's not an atypical thing. Like that neither of us really raised an eyebrow at that. We're like, oh, SBC convention. Yes, we'd expect somebody to charge up and hand us a tract about why Calvinism is pagan.
Dude, so you got fun. A tract. What? I feel like we're in the tract business now.
As a group. Sadly, it was not handcrafted leather. It was it was cardstock and glossy.
It was a standard tract then.
I would never read a standard cardstock tract now.
No,
after
and
track.
Really,
I know these commercial tracts, Big R. They're not as good as the independent ones. The indie
absolutely,
tracts.
They're quite literally a dime a dozen. No, and it was really more of an advertisement for his church, which I also cannot name because somebody who listens to this probably knows of the church. But it was – so there was that. There's the it's very interesting to go sit on the convent – like the – in the business area. So churches send what they call messengers, which I think sounds very culty. But basically –
oh, it sounds terrible.
Basically representatives who are allowed to vote on – whatever it is that needs voting on. This year, the SBC was electing a new president that they served 2-year terms. And it's very
that election went well, too, I heard.
Oh,
it came off without a hitch.
Swimmingly. It was, hanging chads everywhere. but it's, I mean, it's, you think like church business meeting and you get bored and probably frustrated. It's like that. Except with like the most eager church business meeting participants from every church across the American South.
Oh.
If that gives you a sense of how delightful the business part of the SBC convention is.
Baby, that sounds miserable, man. Well, I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you're back here in studio. You sound a little bit more lively, and hopefully this time together will be rejuvenating for you. But you mentioned you mentioned Calvinists, and I want to say one thing to segue into our our sponsor time. Actually, we got a new sponsor for program. Because we are nothing if not businessmen who are always securing new sponsors. And our sponsor for this week is actually sponsoring one of my other podcasts. It's Olive Tree Bible. And they have sent me, as a part of this other deal, John Calvin's like 22-volume commentaries. Wow. And I'm ashamed to say that as a Calvinist myself, I hadn't read that much of actual Calvin. And all I wanted to say was I'm really, really enjoying these. Actual Calvin is comes off much better than most of his fans.
It's so true. And his commentaries are like reading a really good sermon. Like you're just like, dude, wow,
incredible.
This guy's a really good expositor.
They're so insightful, dude, and they're so helpful. I'm finding myself like highlighting like a madman. So
I'm sure he would be very encouraged by our praise. He lacked confidence, and so having two guys on a podcast say he's a great expositor probably meant a lot to him. But
absolutely, he'd be thrilled.
Yes,
you know, he'd just be thrilled. So Pipe, take us into this segment. Tell us about Olive Tree Bible. And then we'll get into what we're going to get into today.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with Bible software, listeners, they have an entire library of resources, commentaries and lexicons. And so all your stuff to study Greek and Hebrew and things like that, but also a whole bunch of just, Christian books, like our respective books are on there. And so you can interact with them in this. The advantage of having an environment like Olive Tree is that if you make highlights, you take notes, you do anything, you can link that to any other study that you're doing. So if you're trying to do sermon preparation, for example, or teaching preparation, you can pull up a passage of scripture and all the pertinent notes you've taken on that, as well as maps and all this stuff. They have this cool split screen thing where you can put content side by side for study purposes. So it's really good in the mobile environment. The online version is great, but I mean it's ideal because you can do it on an iPad or an iPhone, things like that as well. So it's not dissimilar from something like a Logos or something like that, although their price points are lower than that. So the other thing is you don't have to buy huge packages. So you don't have to spend like $1,000 and get this massive library. You can buy things as you go. So that's something for if you just wanted to kind of dabble in it, you can download the app for free and then stock up your library. They run sales regularly. So like if Amazon's running a deal on Kindle books, Olive Tree will often run the same deal on their books, things like that. So you can get everything at a cheap price. The deal they're offering our listeners, so if you just go to olivetree.com, they have their super clean website. You can explore it. It's really easy to navigate. If you decide you want to buy anything on there, so load up your library or just kind of dabble in stuff, use the code RANT, R-A-N-T, RANT, and you'll get 20% off, and that's good through the end of July. So you can and I don't think that's a one-time thing. They didn't say. So if you wanted to buy a few things over the course of a month, keep using the code RANT and load up that. So olivetree.com, go check that out. One other thing, since we're talking about Calvinists and expositors, I feel like I need to mention this. They have some user testimonials, and the very first one is from somebody near and dear to my heart, one John Piper, who says that the Olive Tree Bible Study app is his default mobile Bible. I can attest this is true. I've seen him use it 100 times. He uses it for his daily devotions. He uses it for study because he can use his Greek and Hebrew resources with the English, copy and paste stuff in and out of other documents. So John Piper says it's awesome. It must be awesome.
There you have it. Pipe, could we get your dad to do a similar endorsement of this program?
This is harder than talking about the SBC.
It's tough. Let me just say this. You don't have to say yes or no right now, okay? Let's just put it out there and see how it feels, you know? And we can come back together on this in a couple of weeks. How about that?
For some context, I recently emailed I emailed my dad's assistant because that's how it works.
Yeah.
I call him about personal things, but anything endorsement or work-wise, I go through his assistant. Right. And was turned down for a speaking invitation. So I invited him to speak an event that I'm helping to plan. And this is not the first time this has happened. So,
dude, that's outstanding.
Not a lot of nepotism in the Piper family.
And by speaking engagement, you mean you just invited him down for like a weekend this summer and his assistant turned you down.
Right.
Well, no, I actually went back to his assistant and said, oh, he won't come. What if I bring the grandkids?
Oh, there you go.
That was nice. that was my negotiation tactic, and I haven't heard back yet. So we'll see how it plays out.
That's not a card that you can play with other evangelical celebrities, Pipe. And speaking of other evangelical celebrities, circa the 1990s, I want to talk about this panel that Donald Trump has put together. And Trumpy has it seems like he's been quiet for a couple of weeks, which is strange. But he was in the news again when it came out that he was engaging sort of these evangelical megastars from the 90s. So we're talking about guys like Jerry Falwell, guys like, I don't know, Dobson was a part of it. So a couple of questions. One, what do you guys make of this move by Trump? But also, if you're one of these guys, does associating yourself with Trump hurt you, obviously? And does that count as an endorsement? What do you guys think? Big R, are you into politics at all? We've never talked about this, baby.
No, I'm not like a big – I don't got a big pulse for it, to be quite honest. I really – the sun does not rise and set in my life based on who's in the White House, quite frankly. Yeah. But I have to admit, because this one has been so polarizing, I've been far more engaged than I ever have been in my life. Because sure. I frankly have a lot of people coming to me right now like asking me – directionally, what's a good direction to take? How are we supposed to think of this? So it's actually caused me to kind of delve a little deeper. Now, in terms of the advisory board, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is that if you are going to be anywhere near this guy, the perception is that you're supporting him. So to say you're on an advisory board, but you're just advising and you're not supporting, I think is a little absurd, because we don't really get to have that kind of We don't really get to draw those kind of finely tuned distinctions.
Yeah, there's not such a thing as a dissenting advisory board.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like Piper, I feel like you would have a better kind of take on this.
The big takeaway for me from all this is a confirmation of the thing that I think we all know is true, but it's really disheartening, and that is the tie between conservative evangelicalism and the Republican Party.
Yes.
And so these people who are on this advisory board have my perception, and I'm sure some of them probably would try to explain this a different way, but they have chosen intentionally to overlook Trump's incredible track record of being a colossal, terrible human. Like, there isn't another way to put it. He is a bad person. He treats people like garbage. He lies. He's an awful, awful potential leader for this country. And they have joined this advisory board. And the only reason they're doing it is because he's the Republican candidate. And they may say, we think we can influence him, but that strikes me as terribly naive. I think he doesn't care what they have to say. He's only interested in figuring out how to get the votes from their denominations.
So, Pipe, what I hear you saying is that you don't want to be on the advisory board.
How do they pay?
With Trump. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what's in it for these guys?
Although the other news that came out this week is that Trump is broke, so I'm guessing they don't pay terribly well. They'll just be like, invoice us later.
Right. Maybe it's a gathering. They'll get a little quinoa salad out of the deal.
Yes.
Well, what do you think? Okay, so that brings up this question then. Do you think that being on an advisory board – so let's just say you're one of these guys and you're not really convinced about Trump, but Trump asks you to be part of the advisory board. Is this a way for you to actually if you're on the fence and you have sort of a – you have kind of a public persona that can sway people, is this your way of kind of weaseling your way in there and kind of showing a backhanded way to support – Trump or just the Republican Party?
I guess, but dude, my question is, what's in it for these people? Like, what are they asking?
Yeah.
I mean, if putting support behind Trump, I don't know, I guess it would get you in the news, it gets you mentioned.
Does it become like, does it become personal platforming for these guys?
Dude, everything is personal platforming,
dude,
but
what they don't realize is, I mean, okay, if it's personal platforming, they care about the political platform and not the evangelical platform, because actual evangelical Christians, not just sort of the statistically labeled types, are not in favor of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so this is a significant mar on the record of these people. Even just guilt by association. Like I'm all for any of these people trying to go into Donald Trump and represent Jesus Christ well to him. But yeah. I don't think that's what a presidential candidate is looking for from an advisory council. What they're trying to figure out is what does the evangelical vote want?
Yeah, it's not like Trump is like saying, hey, you know, guys, what I need is a little personal evangelism. So on our lunch break, can you tell me a little bit more about
The gospel?
You
know,
this isn't the Ethiopian eunuch saying, hey, I'm reading scripture and I just don't understand it. Would you explain it to me? It's him saying, hey, how do I win the southern states, which are mostly evangelical and most of you are from there?
Right. I mean, it's a political maneuvering, but here's what I want to know, though. Like, are we surprised? I haven't seen a comprehensive list on who's on the board. Are we surprised by any of the names that are on that board? Is there any surprises?
I see a couple surprises. I'm almost reluctant to throw out names just because, like, I mean, I guess there's no – it's public, so yeah. I'm a little bit – okay, so here's the list. I'll just read them off. Michelle Bachmann, not a surprise. A.R. Bernard, I don't know who that is. Senior pastor and CEO, Christian Cultural Center, somewhere. A guy named Mark Burns, Tim Clinton, Kenneth and Gloria Copeland, not a huge surprise. James Dobson.
Jimmy.
That is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, Jerry, a little bit.
Jerry Falwell Jr., not a surprise.
Nah.
Ronnie Floyd, who is now going to be stepping down as the president of the SBC convention after this recent election. So that's a significant name. Jensen Franklin, another significant pastor. Jack Graham, pastor at Prestonwood Baptist. That's a bit of a surprise to me. Harry Jackson, Robert Jeffress. That's not a surprise. He's the one who said he hoped we would bomb the bleep out of ISIS. David Jeremiah, kind of a surprise. Richard Land, former – he's the one who held the position that Russell Moore holds now before Russell Moore did, or at least previously. James McDonald, that's a bit of a surprise. Johnny Moore, Robert Morris. I don't think that's the Robert Morris who's the cigarette guy. Tom Mullins.
Or the talent agency.
Tom Mullins, Ralph Reed, James Robinson, Tony Suarez, Jay Strack, Paula White, Tom Winters, and Celie Yates. So Celie Yates is a fairly big player in the publishing industry. So, I mean, there's a few names on there that I just look at and I go, I mean, my gut reaction was, I thought you guys knew better.
Yeah, like, why are you doing this, you know?
Well, because you could be on a presidential advisory board, I guess, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess, man. I don't know. It's an ego thing, maybe. Here's a final question, Ari, the advisory board. Who do you think would last longer in one of the board meetings? Okay, I'm going to give you two names. One, Rachel Held Evans. So again, the room is full of these aforementioned people, and there's a little quinoa salad, and Trump is there. So Rachel Held Evans or Rob Bell. Who lasts longer in one of these meetings?
Rob Bell, hands down.
Without leaving in a huff.
Oh, Rob Bell, hands down, because he just – because Rachel Held Evans will actually fight for stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And if she thinks these guys are full of crap, she will fight for something. Rob doesn't fight for anything. He just makes up words.
Well, let me give you another one. Rachel Held Evans or Brian McLaren?
I feel like Brian McLaren might show up like nude with a sandwich board out of protest or something. Like he would do something extreme.
Or in like a kimono with a sitar and he'd just sit in the corner and play
it. It would be an odd thing.
Okay, here's two I have for you. Moeller or John MacArthur?
Moeller would last longer because he would filibuster. MacArthur would I think he would just accuse and storm out.
Russell Moore or Tim Keller?
Ooh, Big R, you're getting these are hard hitting scenarios.
Yeah. You know what? It's time for a little hard hitting journalism right now.
I'm gonna let Ted answer that one. I'm not sure about that one.
Wow,
yeah, Russell Moore or Timmy K?
Dude, I could see Russ hanging in there only because Russ, I feel like Russ is well schooled in the ways of these sort of.
Well, he used to work on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, so, these sort of southern, big money, politician, you know, angle working kind of guys. So,
but he is a lot feistier than Keller. Like he's not gonna stand for nonsense. And Keller, while he will not buy into nonsense, I think is a lot more patient.
I could see Keller
could see him sort of going like meditative Yoda.
Yeah, politely, like he'll sit there and listen with like the pads of his fingertips together, sort of contemplatively, but inside he's dying. You know what I mean?
Oh, it would kill him, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, one thing that crossed my mind when I looked at this is I wonder, and again, I'm running the risk of judging these people, but I guess that's what we do. How many of them think that they are so significant because of their platform that they think that they are carrying, like they're carrying the big stick into this room? Nice. And so they're walking in thinking, I can make a difference. I was asked to be part of this because I'm significant and I can make a difference. And so it's not that they necessarily agree with Trump. It's that they think they have the pop to actually sway him.
Yeah, I think that's a valid question, but I can't get past the idea that as soon as you're asked and as soon as you say yes, how is anybody going to think that you're not for Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because the aim of this is not his spiritual well-being.
Right.
The aim of this is his connection with the evangelical vote, period. Right.
Because he sees that there are people like us that are, you know, it's hashtag never Trump. So, like, this is his attempt to say, okay, how can we soften, you know, sort of our entrance into that world and see if we can convert some of those people, for sure.
Yeah, it was disappointing to say the least.
Yeah.
Boys, it's fascinating stuff, as is, Pipe, the fact that we just had a Game 7 in the NBA Finals. Big R, your hometown, Cleveland Cavaliers, came away as NBA champions this year. And I'm sure you and Melissa did some celebrating in the streets, man. You probably bought a couple of Cavs t-shirts, maybe flipped over a car. I don't know, burned a sofa. I mean, whatever you guys do there in Ohio when your team wins. I know there was just a lot of jubilation. Do you sense just a surge in people's emotions in Ashland, Big R? I mean, is there a sense of lightness of being, of a weight lifted? Are you seeing
this
in the streets?
Yeah,
in the ministry.
I mean, we burned down our house. We're so excited. So I'm currently sitting out here in the street.
Well, your internet connection improved. You should have done that a long time ago.
You should burn your house down more often.
I mean, we burned our house down. We ran to a Dick's Sporting Goods at midnight and bought like every single Cavs 2016 T-shirt they had. Nice. So we'll be doing a giveaway here on the rant coming up. But yeah, it was. I mean, you know, the energy was palpable, as you like to say, Big T. I mean, it was just. I mean, I had people saying like, literally, I can't stop crying. I'm sitting here with my dad and we're just weeping for joy. And I like all of that. Like, you boys got to remember, like, that is so foreign to me. Like, you guys are sports fanatics. So like, I get a little of the emotion. I'm emotional about other types of things. So I get the emotional aspect
like
of
Christmas
it. But,
novels.
Right.
Christmas
like,
novels.
Right. Like the new
Kingdom Work, like Christmas.
The new Richard Paul Evans, you know, Christmas novels coming out November 15th. I'm a little excited,
but
I don't know that I'm going to get all teary eyed when it rolls up, you know, in my Amazon Prime box, you know, the day it comes out. I don't know if that's going to happen. And I just find it fascinating that people think that, like, man, this was this drought that we were going through. You know, they're using all the language of we and how it's been since 94 64. And like now, finally, it's like, and they use words like now and finally. And I'm always like, well, now what? And finally what? Like what happens now? Like how does this move life on for you? And they just, you know, they're like, oh, you're just trying to rain out on a parade right now.
Let's talk about this thing. So the series, and I watched the whole thing, which I don't normally do, but my son, Tristan, he was super big into it this year.
Hold on, Big T, you're not a basketball guy, right? I mean, that's not your gig.
I'm kind of a casual NBA guy. I get into it once in a while, but I don't follow a team. And Big R, baby, I'm not a sports guy. Like, I love football, I love boxing, but that's it. That's literally it. Like, I don't follow teams. I don't really get into the fandom of sports,
hold on. Let's explore that for one second. I mean,
yeah,
so,
sure. Go.
So you're not like emotionally driven then, like by teams winning or losing. Oh, okay.
Zero emotion. Yeah, not at all.
I didn't know that, Big T. I'm like fascinated by that right now.
No, dude, I watch football like a coach or a player. You know what I mean? I enjoy the game. I enjoy the nuances. I enjoy watching individual people within the game. But yeah, I can't tell you the last time I like got emotional about a team.
So you don't get. So I know you're trying to push past this real fast. So yeah. let's just pause.
Big R, I want to answer your questions though. I want to accomplish what you want
to
do here.
What Ronnie's trying to do is to point out that he's not the only non-sports guy on this podcast. I believe that I heard a sense of smug satisfaction in his voice.
No, that's not what confession. I'm saying, Pipe. No,
you're
I'm
really?
Not
with oh, really? Both of you in this.
Because Piper, yeah. I know we're treading on really delicate ground here with you.
Oh,
I know.
What are you trying to suss out?
I will not proselytize about sports. I love sports, but if you don't, I don't judge you for that. I totally understand why people don't give a crap about sports.
No. You're missing my point. My point is that I do have a sport and a half that I really love, but yeah. It would never like.
What's the half?
Well, I don't know. I'll figure that one out. Okay. But I just didn't want to say one sport because it always goes back to the same thing. But what I'm trying to say is that as much as I'm invested in that sport, which is quite a bit as just an armchair guy, it would not I would not be sad for a week if my favorite guy didn't win. Like it just doesn't produce that. I enjoy it. I love it. But it doesn't produce that level of sadness and depression and man, I feel like I've been bummed for weeks because the Cavs couldn't pull off the championship. I mean, I had people saying I don't know what I'm going to do if we lose game 7. And I'm just sitting there going well, you're scaring me now. I don't know.
You're scheduling counseling time with your parishioners, blocks of hours.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying.
The correct response to them is the same thing you've done every day, every year since 1950, whatever, when the last time a Cleveland team won.
Exactly.
You guys are used to this. You should know exactly what you'll do if they lose.
Exactly.
Well, all right. So I watched this whole thing, all 7 games of this crap series.
It was pretty crappy.
Dude, it was garbage. Every game was a blowout. Until the last one. So I watched game 7 and I'm watching it with Tris and with my lady. She's reading a book and, it goes back and forth. Cleveland is the least bad at the end and they win. Right. So here's where the emotion got interesting to me. So they win and the immediate response for LeBron James, who's the world's greatest basketball player, he drops to the floor and he starts crying. Okay, I get it. I get sports emotion. He's crying. He's rolling around on the floor by himself. And then they cut to Ty Lue, Cleveland's sort of de jure head coach. LeBron is probably really the de facto head coach. But so Tyronn Lue is the guy that sits on the bench with the suit and does head coachy things. And he's got his head in his hand and he's crying. And it occurred to me that it didn't occur to anyone to walk across the floor and shake hands with anybody from the other team. The Warriors players are just sort of streaming up the aisle toward the locker room. And dude, I'm not an old timey sports guy. I'm not you got to go do a handshake line, but I mean, you've just played in the 7-game series. You got LeBron, you got Steph Curry, these two megastars. Can't they greet one another, or don't they have a word for one another after this thing? And I guess that was the, that was the aspect of the emotion that got to me, and I wrote a piece about it. It's called "Everybody's Crying Alone," about the kind of aftermath of this game. And I knew it was the kind of piece that I would get kind of semi killed for, because all the LeBron disciples would come out and say that I'm just trying to crap on the guy's title or whatever.
I think he's currently the most polarizing guy in sports, because I mean there are LeBron haters. Yeah. And then there are LeBron defenders, which basically consists of Ohio and then everybody outside of Ohio. So you have those defend him and those who despise him.
I just thought, so that's interesting, because I thought that maybe I think this because I'm in Ohio. So there you go. There's the answer to the question that I'm still going to ask, which is I thought LeBron was kind of a universally sort of nice and loved athlete.
He was until he left Cleveland the first time.
Okay.
Right. Which he did in an unspeakably obnoxious fashion.
Yeah, it was pretty douchey the way he did that.
Because everybody talks about him no, man, he's he cares about so much else other than basketball. He's generous. He's a great dad. He's not like your typical basketball guy that's just, all about himself. And I always hear all that stuff.
The reasons that people hate LeBron are not because he is a bad dude. He doesn't do any of the stuff that's actually hateable other than his persona and the fact that he is so brand aware that you feel like everything he's doing is is positioning himself for fame and fortune. You know, everything is like, oh, I'm on camera. I have to pose just so. I have to respond just
like
so.
Trying around on the floor, you know, by himself.
It was kind of like the way T just brought up that like famous article he just wrote. Was it, you mean like that, Piper?
Maybe.
Is that
always, what we're talking about? Always be positioned, always branding.
If LeBron could learn a couple things from Ted about branding. Like that's, Ted is a master self-promoter. LeBron's just a novice.
Okay, let me ask you this, Big T. What could LeBron learn from you about marketing and promoting himself? Give me two things.
About marketing and promoting himself?
Yeah.
Number one, get off Twitter. get off Twitter.
Yeah,
run.
Leave them wanting more.
Leave them wanting more. Exactly. That's
of course,
my
in your
thing.
Case, Ted, it's more like leave them wanting anything.
Leave them wanting anything. That's it. That's the tagline. So get off Twitter. All right. Nobody wants to read your thoughts. You know, we don't love LeBron James for his thoughts. Let's be honest. This guy's 6'8", 260 pounds. He's shredded. He's an incredible athlete. He has no charisma. None. He has like zero actual charisma. And Big R, when I'm talking about athletes with charisma, I'm talking about guys like, you know, polarizing guys. Allen Iverson was polarizing. He had a ton of charisma, dude.
Yes.
Ton of charisma on the floor. You just
Steph
want to
Steph Curry is also polarizing, also ton of charisma.
Yeah.
His is like friendly next-door neighbor charisma, but...
Yeah, six. Friendly next-door neighbor, your family's precious, whatever, it's traditional. That's kind of a charisma of its own. But LeBron, man, and I'm not knocking him. I'm not a LeBron hater. Hear this, man. I don't have a dog in the LeBron fight. I don't care. I'm just saying the guy is a phenomenal athlete with no charisma. And all the social media in the world is not going to give you charisma. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what to tell him, Big R. I don't know what to tell this guy to do.
I wish he would stop trying to be a brand.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say this for certain, but I think, you know, right now he has won 3 championships and lost 4 championships. Yeah. I think he could be like 5-2 if he was as locked in and focused on basketball as he was on becoming a worldwide brand. Now, I don't know that's true because he plays hard. He doesn't miss games. He's the best player
he's
since
incredible.
Michael Jordan, like,
yeah.
Period. Yeah. But he just sort of disappears sometimes, and I feel like there's not that, like, locked-in sense of excellence in quite the same way.
Yeah, but Piper, I mean, to ask him to stop branding himself, I mean, dude, that doesn't – that's like asking Calvin to stop being a Calvinist. That's like asking Jared Wilson to stop tweeting every 41
every
seconds. I mean,
10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, that's like asking the impossible. It's like asking him to be not himself. I mean, that's who he is, right?
But dude, isn't this the off-putting thing though? You know what I'm saying? Like there was a sense, and again, I'm going to go all retro and nostalgic here, but there was a sense in the 80s when you were watching, I don't know, the Lakers and the Celtics, or in the 90s when it was the Bulls and like the Bad Boy Pistons or whatever. Like there was a sense that these guys were like all in on basketball, man. They were committed. They were going after each other. And I think there was something winsome about that, you know?
Yeah, but they didn't have the branding opportunities back then. Now, like, everything can be a brand. Everything can be part of the package that, like, sells you. So, obviously, that's going to be exploited. I mean, how many different, like, managers and publicists does a guy like LeBron have around him at any one time?
All of them.
That's what I mean. I mean, and they're the ones that are really driving that, by the way, even more
Dude,
than
you know,
LeBron.
You know who LeBron is? He's Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know?
Wow.
The guy's undefeated. He's the best boxer in the world, maybe the best boxer of all time, one of the best. But nobody likes him, you know? And it's a profoundly sad thing, actually.
I think LeBron will be viewed more favorably historically than Mayweather. But that's hard. It's also a more popular sport currently, so it's hard to say. Yeah. But, I mean, he also lives in the age when you're not allowed to feel neutral about somebody. You are required to hate them or root for them. Yeah. So it's a hard position to take to feel like, oh, he's fantastic and I don't really care. So it's just the weird internet age where everything matters too much.
Dude, that's such a great point. And like everything is you have to have a position on LeBron, you know?
Yeah.
And what you're saying, Big T, is like you actually fall into the category of something that says, I like him for what he's supposed to be, which is a basketball player. I don't care about the rest. I just want to see him play good basketball.
That's it, man. He's fun to watch. If you're into a certain aesthetic of basketball. And I think, Pipe, I'd love to hear you speak to this briefly, but one of the things that I found, I guess, unpleasant about this series was, so you had Golden State living and dying by the three. Mm-hmm. So they're jacking three balls all over the place. When they're dropping, you know, the team's winning. When they're not, they're losing. So you had that on one side of the floor. The other side of the floor, you had, you know, LeBron just charging to the rack like a fullback, you know, using his 260 pounds and just bullying his way in there, drawing a foul, maybe making a layup or a dunk or whatever. And there just wasn't a lot of diversity of basketball. There's no mid-range jumper anymore. There's no post moves. Nobody's posting up. Nobody's like, you know, doing interesting things down low. I don't know. I guess I miss all that from a basketball standpoint. Speak to that.
I mean, I think that's – well, to be honest, you sound a little bit like a grown-up telling the kids, that's not music, that's just noise.
Dude, I do. I know I sound like that. I know exactly that I sound like that.
You're right that there are things that are gone that were beautiful in their own right. Now, like nobody plays like the Jordan mid game, you know, where he could hit that 14-foot fadeaway over anybody at any time, and it was music. But I do think that like there are subtleties to the game now that never existed back then, and the way that Golden State runs their offense, they didn't look good in this series, but like if you watch them over the course of the whole year. Mm-hmm. They looked amazing. And Cleveland does live and die on the fact that LeBron is the most physically dominant player. He's Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
You know, where he's just like, the floor just tilts his direction because nobody can actually stop him. He gets fouled on every play, and it's up to the refs whether or not they call it. Sometimes he misses shots because he's human. But, like, it's a different sort of aesthetic. My problem with the game, I mean, with the series aesthetically was just, the teams didn't play that well.
Yeah, that's so right. You saw not the best version of both.
Or they never
teams.
Played well at the same time until game seven. One team played well and the other team looked lackadaisical. One team played well and the other team was injured. Like whatever it was. And it wasn't until the last game that you finally saw, oh, these teams are – they're both actually really in this game.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, can I finish this by asking you guys one question? This is what I'm curious about, man. So – given like probably the five or six Cavs sermon illustrations I'm going to be using on Sunday.
Ooh, nice.
Do you think it'll be offensive or weird if I say jacking threes and charging the rack like Big T just did?
Oh, I see what you're doing, Big R. You're making a joke about the vernacular. Pipe.
I just want to know if that's going to keep me current with the kids on Sunday.
I think you need to speak in whatever way sounds comfortable to you, because the people who use vernacular that don't know how to use it always – I mean, trust me. I listen to my dad try to do this periodically. He didn't – it doesn't go well. Let's just leave it at that. It doesn't go well. So I would stick to whatever language feels natural coming out of your
mouth. Baby, listen to me. You need to go to your local sports retailer and purchase a LeBron James jersey.
I already have one.
Are you writing this? You already have one. Yeah, or just go to your closet.
Wearing it currently.
Is it tucked in?
Of course.
You need to tuck it into your chinos or your skinny jeans.
Uh-huh.
And
skinny chinos. How about skinny chinos?
Skinny chinos. That's a thing.
Or joggers.
You need to get the hip skinos.
You need to get the hipster joggers.
Dude. So tuck it into your skinos, Big R, and put a little military jacket over it. But you got to keep the jacket open so that people can see where it says Cavs in the number 23. And you need to preach in that on Sunday because
how would our tithes be after a morning like that, Big T?
They would be up threefold, I'm going to say.
Hundredfold
tithes. So far be it from you to use any vernacular that you're not comfortable with, but I just want to see you in the jersey, okay?
All right.
Yeah, picture her, it didn't happen.
Guys, let me just say this word to cap it off. Done. Yeah. Done.
Okay. Well, boys, we've got one more topic. And speaking of celebrities, right, which we've been doing kind of all day here in the studio.
Yeah, we're kind of like the TMZ of podcasts.
Today we are. That's correct.
Yes. TMZ of Christian podcasts, yeah, today. Absolutely. But so the question was posed, I think, by somebody on Twitter. How are we to deal with this issue of like celebrity – listening to celebrity sermons? All right. So we all have access now to – all these John Piper sermons, all the Timmy Kay sermons that we want, Maddie Chandler, whoever your guy is. Is it sort of disloyal to your local church pastor to listen to these, you know, iPod pastors, these celebrities. How do you guys deal with that? So we got kind of a serious topic to close out the afternoon here. Big R, you're a man of the cloth. You're a pastor yourself. You're a local church pastor. How would you feel about one of your parishioners talking about the latest Tim Keller sermon that they just listened to?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, man. I'm secure in it. You know, like I think, you know, I think we the availability of those guys means that we can. There's a level of you know teaching and instruction and exhortation that we can get that we weren't able to get. You know, 20 years ago. So again, guys like Timmy and Johnny and Maddie and Francis, mm-hmm. you know,
Channy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good. I think what happens is I think you can take it to a place where, if all you're doing is just, you know, just kind of, you know, vegging out on celebrity podcasts and then you, you start to supplement, you know, just regular church attendance and being involved in the body with that. Obviously you're kind of steering down a, you know, you're oversteering that. But I think, you know, for guys that have commutes and you know, have to drive a little and have to, you know, downtime, why not put on like a Keller sermon? I mean, I would say, please do that. Like do that. Like, yeah. Listen to this. Like I give guys that listen to this sermon. Like I heard this sermon from whatever, Mark Dever. It was really good. It really like it said something that was really helpful for me. I think it'd be helpful for you. Like do it, but just don't let it be like a replacement. And I think Piper, you actually, was it you or what's that guy's name? Al Trogi or whatever that like wrote an article on that recently.
I wrote one a while back and then just reshared it recently. And
that was you. Okay.
People seemed interested in it. There was some, you know, some discussion on my Facebook page about it where some people were like, but I've really benefited from this. And others were like, absolutely, totally agree. My take on it was, it was basically why I stopped listening to them. And it wasn't a condemnation of the sermons. It wasn't saying these are garbage. Nobody should listen to them. They're terrible for you. It was simply saying in my circumstance with my mindset, I'm a critiquer by nature.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to a celebrity pastor. Which means that my standards for what a sermon should sound like are probably different than other people's. My engagement with sermons are different than other people's. And I'm a critiquer by nature, which means when I spent a long time listening to – I mean, through my 20s, it was a lot of Mark Driscoll. Then it was a lot of Matt Chandler. And I realized that what happened on Sunday mornings is I would go in and be disengaged and kind of disinterested because – the pastor at my church couldn't preach like those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a really good preacher at the local church level and a really faithful pastor. And he was very, you know, he's what a pastor ought to be. And I was suffering as a church member and because I was comparing based on these sermons. And so I realized it's bad for me to be listening to these. And so I quit. And I think I've listened to two sermons on a podcast in the last, you know, 5 years or so, 4 years.
So for you, it's just like a cautionary thing. But like, what about Big T? What do you think about that? Do you listen to a lot of sermon podcasts or you just like kind of avoid it?
Dude, no, I do. I've enjoyed these and benefited from them over the years. I think I go in streaks with it. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm on a Tim Keller kick right now. And for me, man, I had this commute. Out to my kid's school. So I would take him like 20 minutes both ways. And, you know, sometimes I'd have Maxim, the other kid in the car, and we would listen to a Timmy K sermon together sometimes just as a way to get our heads right in the morning and provide some fodder for interesting conversation that wasn't like inane and stupid as it can often be between two little boys. So that was good, man. And I don't feel like it infringed upon kind of my loyalty to my local church pastor, in part because, you know, my guy here is super talented. You know, he's one of these guys that, you know, he's a great, faithful local church pastor, but he could easily be world class if he wanted to like pursue the fame and the publishing thing like other guys do. So yeah, in a sense, I feel like, you know, whatever I'm getting from the Timmy K's and the John Pipers of the world is just sort of supplemental to what I'm getting Sunday morning. And I guess I'm glad it's out there as a resource. But I think the caution to hero worship is real and it's a good caution. You know, if we're if we're consuming these guys kind of to the exclusion or to the critique of our local church pastor, then we probably need to dial it back, you know?
I think there's another caution, and it's another two-sided coin, which can be a real benefit or a real caution. And so some of the people I heard back from were local pastors, and they said, you know, I've really benefited from listening to these to improve my sermons.
Yeah.
And I thought that's great. However, I've also listened to pastors and I go, you sound like a bad Frank Caliendo. Like, you sound like you're doing an impression of a famous pastor.
Yeah.
And so even that's a two-sided coin, because I absolutely think it can be beneficial to listen to Tim Keller or whoever on how to handle a text or how to handle an issue. Oh, Keller did a sermon on suffering. I'm going to listen to that because maybe I'll gain some insight on how to help my people. That's a great thing to do. However, if you begin mimicking and you lose your voice and your style as a pastor,
yeah,
you're not shepherding your congregation. Tim Keller is through a sorry substitute.
Yeah, that's right. Well, boys, I can tell you this about podcasts. You know, this should be the only podcast that people listen to. I don't want them listening to any other podcast.
No, that's true. And we certainly don't imitate any others because we don't listen to them.
That's right. That's right. This is it, man.
Never listen to another podcast. I would never listen to another one, ever.
Yeah, that would be disloyal to this podcast.
There's an ESPN podcast. It's a fantasy football one hosted by a guy. Anytime that one of his co-hosts goes on another podcast, he calls it podultery. I think that's what it would be if any of our listeners either listen or if we were to ever go on another podcast. That would
And I think we're going to know that too. I think I'm going to sense that. I think we're going to sense if you've done that one particular Wednesday.
Well, I mean, other than the ones that we already co-host, since Ted co-hosts another one and so do I, and you may podcast your sermons, Ronnie. So none of those count.
Yeah, no, I meant besides the other 9 podcasts that we're a part of.
Exactly. Between us, we are.
We need to limit it to 9 that. Podcasts. Yeah.
Boys, we have wandered to and fro. We truly have done that in this episode, unlike no other. I've enjoyed it. Thanks again to the guys at Olive Tree Bible for all the good that they do. Check them out. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
I'm Don Hawkins, and I once heard Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy say, "You can tell if a person needs encouragement, check to see if they're breathing." I'd like to invite you to my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You, featuring encouraging guests like Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, Dan Cathy, the late Dr. Frank Menrith, Josh McDowell, and more. To subscribe to my weekly Encouragement for You podcast, go to lifeaudio.com. That's lifeaudio.com.